All right, so we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Ayin Gimel 73. We are picking up Ayin Beis Amud Beis 72b, actually three lines up from the bottom. Last word on line, Tana Rabbanan. So says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ger no se mamzera. So we'll say, now we get into an interesting discussion. Obviously, we're in the topic. This is the perek of Yichus. So we're speaking about over here, who is permitted to marry who. So now the Gemara says that a ger, a convert, is permitted to marry a mamzeres. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. These are the words of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says, ger lo yisa mamzeres. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says, no, a ger may not marry a mamzeres. So I will say, as we're going to see in just a little bit, remember, when it comes to a mamzer, the pasuk used by a mamzer is that a mamzer is not permitted. Lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem. So we're going to see ultimately again that Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that kal gerim, the congregation, so to speak, the group of converts, gerim, are not called kahal. Now we're going to see, we're going to expound on that a little bit more in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda omer ger lo yisim amzeres. Fine. So machlok is Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Echad ger, echad eved mishuchrar. V'chalo. So we'll say whether you have a ger, an eved mishuchrar who is an emancipated servant, who essentially is a ger, or a chalo. All of these individuals mutarim v'kohenes. All of these individuals are permitted to marry a bas kohen. I will say, you know what the Gemara is introducing over here is the following: that even though a kohen may not marry certain women, meaning a kohen can't marry a gioras, kohen can't marry a mamzeres, a kohen can't marry a gioras, can't marry a shifcha who was emancipated, and he can't marry a chalala. Those prohibitions only apply from a kohen to the woman, but a kohenes, who meaning a bas kohen, is permitted to marry any of these men. So the Gemara says, my time, Rabbi Yossi. What's Rabbi Yossi's logic? Meaning, why does he say that a ger is permitted to marry a mamzeres? So he says, chamishei kihalei ksivei. Remember, the pasuk says the word kahal 5 different times. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, chamishei kihalei ksivei. Gabi asharis psuli yuchsin. When it comes to those who are disqualified from a genealogical perspective, the Torah says, lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem, lo yavo lo bekal, lo yavo amoni mo'avi bekal, lo yavo lahem bekal, darshlishi yavo lahem bekal, dimitri ve'edom, yukal gai b'surodak. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, the Gemara points out that when it comes to the genealogical issues, the Torah uses the word kahal 5 times. So look at top of Ayin Gimel. What do we do with all these 5 kahals? I will say, now the idea over here is, the Torah could have, technically speaking, included all of these prohibitions in one basic pasuk and indicated that these individuals are not permitted to enter into Kal Hashem. But instead, why does it break up each and every one? Chad, so one Kal, Chad leKohanim, one is to go ahead and Aser Mamzerim onto Kohanim. The Chad leLevim, one is to Aser Mamzerim onto Levim. The Chad leYisraelim, one is to Aser Mamzerim onto Yisraelim. The Chad leMishrei Mamzer Bishtuki, one Kal is to permit a Mamzer to marry a Shtuki. Remember again, a Shtuki is the mother is known, father is unknown. The Chad leMishrei Shtuki biYisrael, and the other is to permit a Shtuki to marry Yisrael. But what's Rabbi Yossi Shita? Kal Gerim lo ikri Kal. Rabbi Yossi Shita ultimately is that Gerim, converts, are not included in the word Kal. Now, listen, what does that mean? A Ger is a full-fledged Jew, and we even saw on Shabbos' daf, you know, when the Gemara said, Kashem Gerim liYisrael kisapachas, Gerim are so difficult for Kal Yisrael. Remember, Tosus said, one of the opinions Tosus says, because again, we're obligated to treat the Ger kindly so many times, where it gives us so many warnings, it's almost impossible at some point in time not to say something insensitive to the Ger. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds us accountable for that. They're included in Mihazra Echel Kamocha. So the Gemara, what Rabbi Yossi is pointing out over here is, there's a genealogical technicality. And what Kaal refers to, according to Rabbi Yossi, are people who are born Jewish. So you're a member of Klal Yisrael, but when it comes to genealogical issues of marrying, they're not included in that word Kaal. Therefore, technically speaking, because of that, a Mamzer is only precluded from marrying those who are part of the designation of Kaal, but those who are not part of Kaal, ultimately, again, a Mamzer can marry. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi posits, a Mamzer can marry a gioras, or I should say, a ger should marry a mamzeres. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda will say, Kohanim v'leviyim mechad kal nafki. Rabbi Huda will say, well, no. One kal teaches us that mamzerim cannot marry, that a kohen levi can't marry a mamzer. If that's the case, there's an extra kal, and that extra kal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, comes to include gerim, namely a gerim may not marry mamzerim. The other possibility is hachanami trei kalin inhu. So ultimately, again, you need both of those kalim, meaning you need one kal to teach me kohanim, one kal to teach me levim. Mamzer b'shtuki u'shtuki b'yisom echad kal nafka. But the permission for a mamzer to marry a shtuki and for a shtuki to marry yisrael could be learned out from one of those kahals. Lo yovo mamzer bekal Hashem. Mamzer vadehu de lo yovo. Furthermore, the Gemara directions that a mamzer may not enter into the kahal Hashem. Well, it's actually a very important yisod. But what kind of mamzer? Only a mamzer vadai. Only Rabbi says someone who is absolutely and unequivocally a mamzer. Ha mamzer safek yovo bekal. But Rabbi says ultimately, again, this is interesting. The mamzer designation is only if someone is definitively a mamzer. But if someone is a mamzer safek, in other words, again, there's a safek. There's a possibility that he's a mamzer. Ultimately, again, the prohibition of marrying into the kal does not apply. Safek yovo bekal. Vadai hu delo yovo. Ha bekal safek. I'm sorry. Bekal vadai hu delo yovo. Ha bekal safek yovo. Furthermore, the mamzer is only precluded from entering into the kahal vadai. But he, meaning from those of us who are definitively part of the kahal, but those who are not definitively part of the kahal, ultimately, again, the mamzer is permitted to marry. So we'll say, what are examples of people who are not definitively part of the kahal? So that'll be the ger, that'll be the shtuki, that'll be the asufi. So again, so we learn two important things over here. Number one, that there's no such thing as a suffic mamzer. I should say differently. The status of a suffic mamzer is tahar. Suffic mamzer is considered to be genealogically fit. It's only a mamzer vade is considered a mamzer. Furthermore, the prohibition of a mamzer is only to enter into the kahal vadai. But anyone who is definitively part of the kahal, but anyone who is quote unquote part of the kahal suffic or suffic bekal, those individuals whose genealogies have some doubtful elements, shtuki asufi gerim, ultimately the mamzer is permitted to marry. The other possibility is hani nami trei kahalininhu. The other possibility is we need both of those kahals for all of the exposition stated about, as well say, according to this last approach, the Gemara wanted to suggest that mamzer b'shtuki and shtuki b'yisrael can be learned out from one kahal. According to this third approach, the Gemara is suggesting that no, each of those needs its own kahal word to darshan. The time it Rabbi Yehuda mehocha, and Rabbi Yehuda's logic is from here. What does Rabbi Yehuda say? Hakal chuka achos lochem v'loger hagar. So what's it? Rabbi Yehuda will say that the pasuk says hakal, right? Speaking about ultimately the assembly, the congregation, Klal Yisrael. Chuka achas lochem v'lager hagar. So according to Rabbi Yossi, we'll say, what do you see from here? You see that when the Torah mentions hakahal, who does it include in that designation? The ger. The ger is mentioned by pasuk. Says Rabbi Yehuda, says the ger is part of quote unquote kahal, and therefore a mamzer may not marry a ger. Rabbi Yossi. Chuka achas hifsika inyan. According to Rabbi Yossi will say that the word chuka ultimately interrupts the flow. In other words, we'll say, according to Rabbi Yossi, he'll say hakahal. Torah says the following: there is the kahal, right? There is the kehila. There is the assembly of Klal Yisrael, and then what? Chuka achas. The klal all has one chuka, one law, lochem for all of you, and then v'lager hagar. But the ger has a separate and distinct designation outside of the kahal. So essentially what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that Lemaisa, there's a fundamental machlokis as to how to darshan the pasuk, fundamental machlokis in Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda as to how to darshan the pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda will say, hakal chuka achos lochem v'lager is one continuous phrase, including the ger in the kahal. Therefore, if a ger is part of the kahal, therefore what? A mamzer may not marry a ger. Whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, he'll understand that chuka achas is like a semicolon. Hakal, chuka achas lochem. Right? For the kal, there is one law, semicolon. For the ger hagar. But the ger has a separate halacha. Namely, that the ger is not included in the kal, and therefore a mamzer can marry a ger. So the Gemara goes weiter. Echad ger ve'echad ev meshuchrar v'chala mutarim b'kohenes. So remember again, the next statement of the Braisa was that a ger and an Eved Meshuchrar, an emancipated slave, and a Cholal are permitted to marry a Bas Kohen. So we'll say what the Braisa is essentially teaching me is the prohibitions that apply to a Kohen do not apply to a Kohenes. So the Gemara says, bless you, this supports Rav's statement. lo husruk sheros li nasi lepsulin. So we'll say it's very important. We learn from here that women do not have the same genealogical limitations as men. That whereas men ultimately, again, specifically Kohanim, have specific genealogical limitations, those genealogical limitations, I should say, certain marital genealogical limitations, those limitations do not apply to a woman who is a Kohanis. Therefore, a woman who is a Kohanis can marry a Mamzeres, she can marry a Shtuki, and a Sufi, a halal, a ger, but even though her Kohanic counterpart is not permitted to do so. So the Gemara goes weiter, the Gemara says, Darish Rabbi Zera ben Mechuza, so this is actually an interesting maisa. So Rabbi Zera Darish and then Mechuza, the following idea. He says, ger, good morning Josh. Come, you could come. Take him a special one. Anywhere. Good to see you. It's like a Dafyomi MVP. This is better than running track, by the way. You get even, you know, even bigger medal. So the Gemara says like this. So Darsh Rabbi Zera ben Mechuza. Rabbi Zera Darshan in Mechuza the following idea. Mechuza was a place, a city. Ger mutar b'mamzeres. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Zera went to Mechuza and he said a ger, a convert, is permitted to marry a mamzeres. I understand, Rashi points out that in Mechuza, there were a lot of gerim, a lot of converts. So what happens? Can you imagine this scene? So they began to pelt Rabbi Zera with their esrogim. Can you believe that? They began to pelt Rabbi Zera with their esrogim. They both said, now why? They were offended. They felt that because he was publicly darshaning and saying that what? And saying that Lamaisa, that Gerim can marry, that Gerim can marry Mamzerim, that he was disparaging Gerim. So they began to pelt him with esrogim. So Rava said, who would ever be crazy enough to darshan such an idea like this in a place where the majority of the population are gerim? Now what he was really saying was, it takes a very special person to convey this type of information with the right type of sensitivity in a city where the majority of people are converts. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Darash Rava ben Mechuza. Listen to this. So Rava took a different approach. Rava said, so Ger Mutar ben Kohanes. So let's say, so Rava gave a share in Mechuza, also city, same city, a lot of Gerim. So he said, a Ger is permitted to marry a Kohanes. So a Ger is permitted to marry a Bas Kohen. So Ta'anu Bishiroi. So let's say, so they clothed him in silk. In other words, they're very happy with this because they felt that that statement was machshiv gerim. They felt that he was making them important. So hader darish lu ger mutar b'mamzeres. So then he said, oh, and also a ger is permitted to marry a mamzeres. Amrulei afsidata lekamaisa. So they said to him, you've just undone all of the good that you've done. In other words, we were so happy with you, and now that last statement has taken, detracted everything you said before. Samaluhu, he said, no, you're wrong. The tavluchu avdi, luchu, say, look at the good I've done for you. E boy mehachanasiv, v boy mehachanasiv, look what I've done for you. I've gone ahead and given you the ability to marry from whichever side of the spectrum you would like. I've given you the opportunity to marry for a Kohanes, and I've given you the opportunity to marry a Mamzeres. Vilchosa, we'll say, what is the halacha? Ger mutar bekohanes. I will say, first of all, halacha lamaisa number one is that a Bas Kohen is permitted to marry any of these individuals. So she's permitted to marry a ger, a chalal, a shtuki, and a sufi, even though, again, a kohen is not permitted to marry these people. Umutar b'mamzeres. Ger mutar b'kohenes, umutar b'mamzeres. So first, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Vilchasa, ger, mutar b'kohenes, umutar b'mamzeres. So we'll say first order of business is a ger is permitted to marry a kohenes, which fine. That's because a kohenes herself is not bound by the same marital restrictions as her kohen, as her male kohen counterpart. And furthermore, a ger is permitted to marry any of these individuals as well, including a mamzeres. So the Gemara says, mutar b'mamzeres, mutar b'kohenes, lo husru kasheros linase lepsulim, u mutar b'mamzeres kirabiyosi. So we'll say, ultimately, halacha lemaisa, we pass on like Rabbi Yossi, namely that kahal gerim lo ikri kal, and therefore again a ger is permitted to marry a mamzeres. That's order of business number one. Number two is that we pass in that a kohenes is not bound by the same marital restrictions as her kohen counterpart, and therefore she's permitted to marry all of these individuals. Again, not a mamzer because she's a Yisraelis, obviously not a mamzer, but a nasufi, a shtuki, and a ger as well. And that's halacha l'maisa. Elu hein shtuki kol shemakas. So also remember again, the next case, the Mishnah was a shtuki. So a shtuki is someone who knows who his mother is, but doesn't know who his father is. So says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Tvar Torah shtuki kosher. Rava says, Midoraisa, a shtuki is kosher. Or Midoraisa, actually, a shtuki is considered to be genealogically fit. So the Gemara says, my time, what's the reason? Rov k'sher mesa. So what's that? Remember, the assumption over here is, that the case here is, the mother is unmarried. The mother is unmarried. Right? So because the mother is unmarried, so the shaila is, who's the father? So the Gemara says, in reality, we should be able to rely on Rov. So Rov tells us that what? Look at Rashi. Rov k'shera metzla, t'cheva d'makira m'esimo d'pinuyehi. We know that the mother is single. Rov ha'olam k'shera metzla, she'in ha'rov mamzer, m'krovim, sha'avlad mehem mamzer, v'af obit kocham ve'evet imba'a lehem, aleha inavad mamzer. We'll say, the reality is, the statistical probability is that the man with whom she had relations, the father of this child, is someone who is kosher. Someone who is genealogically fit. I was, because remember, as she, anyone who she has a child with, assuming that it's not like one of the erva, one of the arayos prohibitions, then ultimately, again, the child is fine. Even if the father is not Jewish, if the father was an eved, ultimately the child is fine. So the Gemara says, therefore, rov k'shera metzla, umiut psula metzla. There is a miut. There's true. There are some. Ultimately, again, who would invalidate this child genealogically? Vi azli in hu legaba. Suppose it's now the Gemara is going to say like this: if we assume that the man came to her called the parish miruba parish, we'll say in general there's a concept that whenever someone separates out from the collective, we assume that it's a member of the rov. So my amit. So what are you concerned about? Dilma azla ihi legabaihu. Maybe it's she who went to the man. Habi le kavua v'chol kavua k'mechzem asdem. So we'll say just, we've learned this principle before. So the paradigmatic case of this is, a person finds a piece of meat. In the street. So the shaila is the piece of meat kosher or not? So the Gemara says it depends. What does it depend on? So the majority of stores that sell meat in the city, what are they? So the Gemara says, if the majority of stores are kosher, and you find the meat in the street, then you could assume that the meat is kosher, because called the parish, anything that separates itself from the particular places and is found in a public domain is considered to be like it came from the majority. If, however, a person went into the store, and I just don't remember which store I went into, and I bought the piece of meat, then we say kol kavua, any suffix that arises in the set place, ultimately is kemechza al mechza, becomes like half and half. That's just, the Gemara learns that out, but those are just the principles of Rov. So the Gemara is saying like this, if we assume that the father of this child came to her, see, he was parish, he separated himself from the quote-unquote global collective and came to her, we assume he's part of the Rov. The Rov are ksherim, if however she went to the man, then ultimately again, he's kavua, he's set in place, and therefore it's mechza mechza, it's half and half. V'atora amra, lo yavo mamzer. So this goes back to what we said before. So what's the worst case scenario? The worst case scenario is that there's the possibility that the man who is the father of this child is someone who is usher to her. Maybe it's her, maybe it's even one of the arayos. So maybe the child's a mamzer, yet the Torah says, lo yavo mamzer, mamzer vadehu de lo yavo, ha mamzer safek yavo. But also, we just learned this before, that the only mamzer is prohibited is who? Is a vadeh mamzer, a definitive mamzer. But a safek mamzer is not usher. Furthermore, pekal vadehu de lo yavo, the mamzer is only prohibited to coming into the kal vadeh, the definitive kal of Yisrael, but a kal safek yavo, say like a shtuki, he's permitted to marry. So we'll say, so therefore you see from here that what? You see from here that lamaisa, in this case of shtuki, midoraisa, the child is perfectly genealogically fit. I so umatam amru shtuki pasul. So if that's the case, why did the rabbis rule that a shtuki is pasul? So for example, why did the rabbis rule that, let's say, a kohen can't marry a woman who's a shtuki? Right? Why did they rule that way? To which the Gemara says, Gzeira shema yisa achosome aviv. But I'll say, this is an interesting case, because there's a concern that what? that maybe, remember, because we don't know who the father of this girl is, there's the possibility that if this Shtuki marries someone, what's going to happen? That Lamaisa, again, husband and wife may end up having the same father. Remember, again, the Shtuki doesn't know who his or her father is. So if ultimately the Shtuki marries someone else, it could be the person that has the same father, to which the Gemara says, well, 1 second. Elame'ata, Shtuki is lo yisa, shame yisacho some aviv. So first of all, again, if that's the case, then in reality, what you really should say is, Shtuki can't marry anyone, right? Because Lamaisa, again, because remember, the Mishnah assumes that one Shtuki can marry another Shtuki, but how do you know they don't have the same father? To which the Gemara says, Shema Yisa Achosumi Aviv, Kol Kihani Mizanu Va'azli. So if that's the case, says the Gemara, do you assume that just because a guy fathered one child out of wedlock, that he's the father of all the children that were born out of wedlock? So the Gemara says, Bashtukis lo yisa, Shema yisa chosem yavid. But if that's the case, he shouldn't be able to marry the daughter of a Shtukis either. In other words, what the Gemara is essentially saying is, if you're Choshesh, that the Shtuki, because he doesn't know who his father is, who he marries may have the same paternal, may have the same father, then essentially the logical progression of that leads to what? That the Shtuki can't marry anyone because he may be marrying his paternal half-sister. To which the Gemara says, Ella lo shlicha, hachanami lo shlicha. So what's the reason why? So therefore, again, no, we don't assume that the Shtuki has the same father as anyone else. So what's the reason why a Shtuki is limited ultimately in his marriage pool? Ella Maila Asubi Yuchsin. Rather, Chazal went ahead and put into place certain safeguards in order to go ahead and create certain milas in Yuchsin. So Chazal wanted to do what they could to keep Jewish genealogy somewhat pure and untainted. And therefore, again, they made certain restrictions when it comes to Yichus. Therefore, if someone knows who his mother is but doesn't know who his father is, he is limited in terms of his marriage pool. Now, what we've seen ultimately, again, is what? What we've seen is that Lemaisa, now remember, so the Mishnah paskind by the Shtuki, the Mishnah said that the Shtuki is permitted to marry the Geri Charuri Mamzeri Nesini Shtuki Asufi Kulon Mutarin Zebozeh. So remember, again, ultimately, the only person who the Shtuki really is precluded from marrying is really the Kohen. And what the Gemara has just demonstrated is, Mida Araisa, a Shtuki should be able to marry a Kohen also. Why? Because Mida Araisa, ultimately, again, the genealogy of a Shtuki, based on Rov, is perfectly good. But because Chazal made certain stringencies with Yichus, therefore, he precluded the Shtuki from marrying the Kohen. V'amar Rava, Dvar Torah, Asufi, Kasher. So Rava said, same thing, really, an Asufi. What's an Asufi? Sufi is a child, is a foundling, a child found in the marketplace. We don't know who the mother or the father is. So in reality, Midah Raisa, and Asufi should also be able to marry a Kohen. My time, now what's the reason? Rava says, listen to this. Eishes ish bebu'ula tola. So what are we concerned about? So perhaps you'd be concerned that Lamaisa, maybe the child is a mamzer. Meaning, let's say, the assumption might be that a woman who was married had committed adultery, and maybe she had this child, and she gave up this child because he was a mamzer. Someone says that wouldn't happen. Why? Because if a married woman became pregnant, she would attribute that pregnancy to who? To her husband. Look at Rashi. Dvar Torah Sufi Kasher. Rashi says, Afa pi shin makirim esimo. Even though we don't know who the mother is, v'necho shem me'eshes ish shabayla la'achadro psulun es la'lekal me'marhach. In my time, me'eshes ish shabayla tola im yolda mamzer. Remember again, married woman is not going to give up a child because the child is a mamzer, because she has a very simple way to deal with this, which is she could attribute ultimately the pregnancy and the paternity of the child to her husband. If that's the case, so when we find the child in the marketplace, we do not assume that that child came from a married woman and this child was conceived in an illicit union. So where do we assume this child came from? A single woman. We assume the child came from a single woman. So the Gemara says, so let's analyze this. So the Gemara says, so therefore, Ma'ika, so if the mother was a single woman, what do you have to be concerned about? Miut Arusos, because maybe the mother was an Arusa, meaning maybe she was betrothed to someone and she had relations with another man who was not her husband and became pregnant like that. Or Miut Shalach Baila Medina Sayam, or maybe she wasn't married to him, but her husband was overseas and she conceived the child with another man. Maybe, perhaps, again, there's a possibility that these are occurring. Kevan Di'ika Penuya, Ve'ikanami Demach Masreavon, Rabbo say, because there's also the strong possibility that the mother who gave up this child was a single mother. Or machmas ravon. Machmas ravon means what? Times of famine. In times of famine, people unfortunately abandoned children because they did not have the means to be able to support them, with the hope that someone else who did have the means would find the child and ultimately bring them up. Therefore, hava palga apalga. Vatora amra lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem. Mamzer vadei hu delo yavo, ha mamzer safek yavo. Bekal vadei hu delo yavo, ha bekal safek yavo. So Moses, so what do you see from here? You see from here that really an Asufi, midaraisa, should be able to marry a Kohen. Why? Because midaraisa, the Asufi, is absolutely genealogically fit. A, why? Because number one, we don't assume the mother was a married woman who committed adultery, because if she became pregnant from adultery, she could go ahead and attribute it to her husband. That's number one. So who do we assume? What are the possibilities over here? So possibility one is that it wasn't Arusa became pregnant from another man. It was a woman whose husband was overseas. But also there's the possibility that what? That it was a single woman, or that this was a family ultimately who gave up the child because they couldn't support the child. So when you put all this together, both say, at most, what do you have? Is a Suffolk mamzer. At most. What's the status of a Suffolk mamzer? What's the status of a Suffolk mamzer? There's no such thing as a Suffolk mamzer, right? By definition, a Suffolk mamzer is kosher, because there is no such thing. Therefore, again, says the Gemara, when you do the math, the Asufi should be able to marry a Kohen as well. If that's the case, umatam amru Asufi pasul. If that's the case, so why do we say that an Asufi is not permitted to marry the Kohen? Shema Yisacho Somei Aviv. Oh, I must say, same concern as we said before, that Lamaisa, because we're concerned that because we don't know who his father is, that ultimately, again, he may come to marry his paternal sister. I'm sorry. Shema Yisacho Somei Aviv Beinei Imo. No, I must say, of course, in the Asufi case, the concern is he doesn't know either of his parents. He may come to marry a sister. I say, the Gemara says, but if that's the case, then why should one Asufi be able to marry another Asufi? Because we'll say, do we assume that just because a person gave up one baby, that they give up every single baby? To which the Gemara says, Basa Sufi lo Yisa, Shema Yisa Choso. So same thing, you should be able to marry a daughter of an Asufi, because maybe you're related to her. Ella lo Shchiach. Rather, the Gemara says, no, we don't assume that there is a familial link between one Asufi and another. Hachanami lo Shchiach, Ella Maila Asubi Yochsim. Rather, says the Gemara, at the end of the day, the reason why an Asufi can't marry a Kohen Abose is why? Because Maila Asubi Yochsim, that the rabbis put in certain chumras. Essentially, it's a chumrah by genealogy. Midra Raisa, a Sufi can absolutely marry a Kohen, but Midra Rabban and the rabbis wanted to make certain chumras, certain stringencies to preserve genealogical purity. Amar Rava Barafuna. So Rava Barafuna says, Abose say, now the interesting part the Gemara is going to discuss is some of the ways in which you could this is talking about an Asufi, a child who is abandoned, and some of the things that if you find them in the child, how it determines their status. For example, Amar Rav Barafuna, Matzah Mohu. We'll say, let's say you find the Asufi, but the Asufi is circumcised. I give him a little days. Top line. Ein bo mishum Asufi. So we'll say, if you find the child circumcised, then the child ultimately, again, does not have the status of an Asufi. Now, what does mean the child does not have the status of an Asufi? Look at Rashi. In b'mishum Asufi, di'ilav to kasheru, lo havatar chabeh l'mimhalei. Because we both say, if the child was not a kasher, if the child was a mamzer, the presumption is that the parents, the mother, whoever it is, would not have taken the time to go ahead and give the child a bris milah. In other words, the assumption that Chazal are working with is that if the child was a mamzer, the mother just wants to be rid of the child. And therefore, again, would not have taken the time to circumcise the child. If the child is a bris milah, that indicates a certain level of maternal concern. If it's maternal concern, then ultimately, the Gemara says, we assume the child is kosher. The Gemara says, next, mishlatei hadame. So what's the mishlatei hadame? Rashi says, ivar of mitu kanam yusharim. So they used to do this thing where, when the child was born, I guess as a result of childbirth, the limbs sometimes became a bit disjointed. When the baby was born, they would straighten out the limbs of the baby. So if you find that the baby's limbs are straightened, whatever that means, so in Bramishuma Sufi, ultimately, again, this is not Nasufi. We'll say, again, because what's happening over here? That indicates what? Somebody's caring. Somebody's taking care of this baby. It's interesting that the assumption is that if there's clear indication of care for the baby, the Gemara takes that to mean that the baby is genealogically fit. The baby is not the mamzer. So next, similarly, Shaif Mishcha, if the baby was smeared with oil. This is also what they would do when the baby was born. The baby was smeared with oil. Malikochla literally means they put some type of makeup around the eyes to make the baby look beautiful. Rami Chumri, so this is actually very interesting. If you look at Rashi, he says Rami Chumri Ksharim shows to the refuah v'tol natinok. They used to make necklaces out of herbs that they would place around the neck of the baby for medicinal purposes. Or Tali Piska, means that there was a kamiya, there was an amulet with some written text around the neck of the baby, or Tali kamiya, or there's some type of amulet with herbs in it around the neck of the baby. In all of these cases, Ein Bo Mishum HaSufi. All of these things represent an expression of care and concern for the child, and therefore, again, we take that to mean that the child is not a mamzer, and therefore the child is perfectly fit. So the Gemara says, here's what's interesting. Essentially what the Gemara is saying is, you can have a situational Asufi who is not a genealogical Asufi. In other words, so the child's an Asufi, just on a Metzias level, because the child is being abandoned in the marketplace. But the child is not a genealogical Asufi, rather the child is considered to be absolutely genealogically fit. Next case, Tali Bedikli. Let's say you found the basket, the baby's bassinet, hanging on a palm tree. So the Gemara says, if a wild animal can get to it, then the child is considered to be an asufi, because then we assume that what? We assume that the parent left the child there to die, imlav. But again, if the animal can't get there, so the baby was left in the palm tree for safety purposes, then the child is not a sufi. Zardasa. So we'll say Sardasa is a type of tree, a sorb tree. If a sorb tree, smicha l'masa, if this tree is next to the city, yeshua misum asufi, then ultimately the child is considered to be an asufi. However, again, ilav, but if not, in bo misum asufi, if you look at Rashi says over here, Zardasa de smicha l'masa, itali bi ilan shesmo zardasa, if the baby was hanging on a tree, meaning the basket is hanging on a tree, that's called zardasa, a sorb tree, ismicha l'masa, afa gavlo machile chaya yesha mishum asufi, omar ba'arve psochim zardasa desmicha l'masa lo pechisa mishis and shidi. So we'll say whatever this means, but apparently shadim used to be found around sorb trees that were close to the city. And therefore, again, it was a known thing that sorb trees close to the city were a makom sakana. So if the parent leaves their child in an active makom sakana, that's an indication the child is an asufi. If, however, it's further from the city, so the sakana of shadim is not there, therefore, halacha lemaisa, again, the child is not an asufi. Bekinishta, if the child was abandoned in a shul, this is interesting, smichta lemasa, if it's a shul that's close to the city, because we also remember often their shuls were outside of the cities. So if the shul was outside of the city, if the shul was close to the city, and many people come to it, the child is not considered to be an asufi. Why? Because the assumption is parents left the child there for what purpose? To be found by others. However, again, if the shul either is far out, and therefore by definition people do not frequent it, therefore yeshua mishum asufi. Therefore it looks like the child ultimately was left there to perish. Amra meimar, hai pira desufli, yeshbo mishum asufi. Take a look at Rashi. Pira desufli, nimtza b'chafira ha'asuyi lahatil sham gar'inei tmar l'ma'achol behema. So we'll say, the Gemara says, if a baby was abandoned in what they call a date pit, So a date pit was a big pit where they used to put date pits into it, and it would decompose to form like animal fodder. So what happens if somebody placed a baby in there? That's an assumption ultimately again that the baby is in a sufi, the child was left there ultimately to perish. Rashi says again, Rashi brings down here again the issue of shedim, right? The issue of shedim that took place. Okay. Charifta dinara, if the baby was placed in a basket, like this is like a Moshe Rabbeinu type of situation, baby was placed in a basket in the channel of the river, ein bo mishum asufi. Both the child's not considered to be in a sufi. Why? Because both in the channel, that's where there's a whole bunch of boats. So the assumption is that parents set their child afloat there. Why? To be found by someone. Parshri. If, however, again, we'll say pashri are like the overflow waters from the channel where people often don't frequent, yesh bo mishum asufi. Then ultimately the child is considered to be in a sufi because we assume the child was abandoned there to die. Sidi rishus harabim, if the child was found in the size of the stone. So we've learned about this from our Shabbos days. So remember again, there was the public thoroughfare. And then there are the tzidi rishus harabim, which are like the shoulder of the public thoroughfare. So the Gemara says, in bo mishum asufi. Then ultimately, a child who is left on the tzidi rishus harabim is not an asufi, because the assumption is the parents intentionally left the child there, that it should be found by others. However, rishus harabim, if the child is actively abandoned in the rishus harabim itself, Rabbo said there's an incredible amount of traffic, then yeshu asufi, because ultimately the child was left, the makom sakon, in a dangerous situation. Amar Rava. So Rava said, however, in years of famine, there is no status of asufi. Now, what does that mean? If you look at Rashi, because remember, this is actually a very sad statement. In years of famine, there were many abandoned children. Rava says, in years of famine, all of these laws about asufi don't apply. In other words, in years of famine, we assume that lemaisa, again, children who are abandoned are ksherim, but rather are being abandoned, unfortunately, because of financial realities. So the Gemara says, one second, Hadurava. So what is Rava commenting on? Rava, remember again, we just finished going through this exhaustive list, essentially, of where certain realities indicate to us that the child was not abandoned because of his genealogical unfitness, but rather, again, it was abandoned because of other circumstances. And Rava says that in years of famine, this doesn't apply. Now, so the question is, which case, ultimately, is he referring to? If you want to say that he's referring to the case of Sarabim, in other words, what Rava seems to be saying is that if you abandon your child, remember the Gemara said if you abandon your child in Rosh Sarabim, the child's in a Sufi. Because abandoning your child in Rosh Sarabim itself is like what? Almost condemning them to death. If, however, you abandon them in Rosh Sarabim, ultimately, again, that's not problematic. So if is Rava commenting on Rosh Sarabim, so the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, I don't understand, just because it's a famine, if you abandon your child, then the child's still going to die. So maybe you'll say ultimately that he's referring to the tzidi, to the size of Sarabim. So my area shnei avon, I feel below shnei rabim. So we'll say, I don't understand. If you say something at Sarabim, so I don't understand. What does it matter if it's a famine? If a parent abandons their child in Sarabim, where the child's going to get trampled, whether it's a famine year or not a famine year, that's indicative the child is in a sufi. If it's tzidi rishus harabim, so whether it's a famine year or not a famine year, that indicates a level of parental concern for the baby, which tells us that the baby's genealogically fit. Eliki itmar de Rava aho. Rather, Rava's statement went on the following. The Amar Rabbi Huda, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Huda bar Zavdi, Amar Rav, Kolzman Shebeshuk. We'll say, listen to this. Kolzman Shebeshuk. As long as the baby is still in the marketplace, Aviv v'imo ne'eman in alav. The parents are still believed. Are still, you know, now what does this mean? What this means ultimately is that let's say you find a baby in the shuk, you find a baby in the marketplace, and then a father and mother show up and they say that baby is ours. As long as the baby is still in the marketplace, the parents are believed. Ne'esaf min ashuk. Once the baby has been collected from the marketplace, or someone found the baby and took the baby, ein ne'emanin alav. And then a man and a woman show up and say, what? This is our baby. They are not automatically believed. In other words, they have to prove that claim. Similarly, my time, what's the reason? Ho amarava, ho il viyotz alav shema sufi. Because Rava said, since once the baby's been collected from the marketplace, the baby has the status of an asufi, therefore again coming along and saying this baby is ours does not prove a halachic claim. Therefore something they need more substantive proof. Va'amar Rava, Rava qualifies this and he says, u'bishnani ri'avon, but in a year of famine, even though the child has already been collected from the marketplace, aviv v'imo ne'eman alav. So Rav says there is an exception to the rule. The exception to the rule is what? In years of famine, Rabosai, where even good people, have to give up their children, or feel compelled to give up their children because of financial hardship, if a father and mother show up, even after the child has been collected from the shuk and claim this is our child, Rav says in years of famine, they are believed. So Amar Rav Chista, so we'll say, now that the Gemara mentioned this, first of all, it's fascinating halacha. So Rav Chista said, Shlosha ne'eman al altar. There are three people that are believed if they make their claim immediately. And these are the three. Elohim, Asufi, Chaya, Upoteres Chavroseha. So we'll say the three are an Asufi, Chaya is a midwife, and Poteres Chavroseha, one who exempts her friends. We're going to see these cases. Asufi Adama. So we'll say, Asufi is what we just said. Remember, so Asufi is the one that says that what? That if there's a child in the marketplace, and while the baby is in the marketplace, the parents show up and they say, that is our child, then what? What's the halacha? We believe them. Rava just adds in that, but once the child is collected, we no longer just simply believe the parents if they make the statement where the parents are, they have to prove that claim. Exception to that rule, of course, is years of famine, where Rava says if the parents show up, even after the child's been collected from the marketplace, the parents are believed to say, this is our child. Chaya, what's the case of the midwife? Tisanya, Chaya ne'emenes lomar zeyatzer yisham v'zeyatzer sheni. So let's say a midwife is believed, let's say a woman gives birth to twins. So the midwife is believed to say that what? This child came out first, this child came out second. So she's believed to say, which is the Bechor? When is that so? When do we believe her? Both say that's only if she has not left the room. That's only if she has not left the room once the mother has given birth. But if the mother gave birth and she left the room, and now what? Now she claims this is baby A, this is baby B, then what? Then ultimately, again, she is not believed. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hochseka al Omda Ne'emenes. So Rabbi Eliezer says, if she stands, literally, Hochseka al Omda means, if she stands her ground. If she stands her ground. In other words, that what this means is, not only did she not leave the room, but what? She hasn't turned her face away from the babies. If she hasn't turned her face away from the babies, then she's believed. Ve'im lav, eino ne'emenes. But if not, she's not believed. My ben Arabos, what's practical difference in these two opinions? Ike benayu da hadr apa. We'll say the afkamini would be if she turns away. Remember, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the midwife is only believed if what? If she does not turn away from the babies for a moment. The babies are constantly in her line of vision. Then she's believed to say which one is first, which one is second. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, even if she stayed in the room, but she turns her back, she's no longer believed. But also, according to the first opinion, however, according to the Tanakhama, as long as what? As long as she stayed in the room, even if she turned away for a moment, she's still believed to say which is baby one, which is baby two. But also, let's just do one more line and then we'll stop. The Gemara says, what's the case of where a woman exempts her fellow women? If there are three women sleeping in one bed, and there's dam, there's blood that's found by one of them. So we'll say the assumption is that the blood is dam nida. Now the shaila, of course, is which woman is the nida? So the halacha is, and the blood is found in a way where it's not clear which woman to attribute it to. So kulan tameos. Ultimately, again, out of Safik, Rabbi say it's a Safik Nida, so which we assume would be a Safik Dara. It's a Safik Dara, it's a Luchumra, and therefore, again, they'll all be Tameos. But if one of them did a Bedika, and she did an internal examination, and she found that she, in fact, is Tameo, that she, in fact, ultimately, again, she's the one from whom the blood came, so what's the halacha? He Tameo, but Kulan Tehoros. She becomes Tameo, and the rest of them become ritually pure. Amar Rav Chisra says, but that's only true if what? Shabbat ka'atzma kashir v'ases. That's only if what? That's only if she checked herself immediately. So we'll say, only if she checked herself immediately after finding the blood, that we assume that the blood found on the bed ultimately is hers and not to the other women. There she becomes the nida, and the other ones ultimately, again, are tohoros. Right? So we'll say, we'll stop over here for today. Well, the Meretz Hashem pick up with Tana Rabbanon tomorrow. Shkoyach.